Now, I have David Lehrer. He's from the NAB. He's here almost every year, if not every year. And he's doing the digital technologies, continuing transformation of radio and broadcast, television broadcast.
Also. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let me unlock my computer here. Okay,
can you switch over?
There we go, you did. Fabulous. Well, thanks again for having me. I had to promise not to talk about metadata if I was going to come back. So this is a little different. I've been here all day, so I've seen what's been presented, and it's been very nuts and bolts, and that's a great thing for people to come and learn about. This is a little different. I'm going to be kind of waxing philosophic almost, talking about digital transitions and where we're at, and at the end I'm going to throw in some NAB-ish stuff. But to start, I always like to try and start with something that'll catch your attention. And I saw this item in Radio World about radio.fyi, where radio is spelled R-A-I-D-I-O, and of course that's for artificial intelligence. So I looked into it. I loaded the app onto my phone, and these are the screens I would see when I was running it. And I also did a screen capture, and that's what I'd like to share with you now. And there's going to be some audio here in a second, so you can hear what this AI-generated radio sounds like. And these are the stations that are available on this radio.fyi app. I picked music.
Information comes to life.
And I've used it before, so it asked me if I wanted to start over, and I clicked on start over.
Welcome, folks. You're tuned into the music station here on radio.fyi, where we truly put the AI in radio. I'm your host, and today we'll be diving deep into the rhythm of all things music and culture. Currently, it's Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. Special shout out to our listener, Tilda David. Thanks for joining us. Stick around for the latest.
What's the latest on Post Malone?
So it has this interactive feature, and I wanted to test it out. So I asked it this question about...
All right, Tilda David. Thanks for your patience. Let's dive into the latest updates on Post Malone. It looks like he's had an incredible summer. His song, I Had Some Help, featuring Morgan Wallen, has been crowned the Song of the Summer for 2024 by Billboard. It's been a massive hit, leading the weekly chart for the entire season. Not only that, but Post Malone's new album is also making waves, reviving his greatest hits collection, the Diamond Collection, on several Billboard rankings. In summary, Post Malone is absolutely dominating the charts right now with both his new collaborations and his classic hits. Thanks for the question, Tilda David. Stay tuned for more updates, and if you've got more questions or thoughts, hit that mic button on the bottom center of the app. Now, let's go back to some music. Here's Morgan Wallen with Cowgirls.
FYI.
Well, so there it is. That's this AI radio station. I guess we heard the demo earlier by Enco of where it would create an ad and you'd put a music bed underneath of it and all. And I have to say that the AI voice in this radio.fyi thing seems more natural to me. I don't know why I've had a tilde placed in front of my name, but I just thought, you know, and today I'm here to talk about digital transitions. And this is one digital transition I'm not going to really be talking about, but this is really the latest digital transition, right, is this influx of AI into every aspect of our business. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about the radio and TV digital transitions. And what I mean by that really is the transition from analog to digital broadcasting. I'm going to follow that up with some trends in digital and hybrid radio, and that's the thing I know the most about. That's what I spend most of my time working on at NAB is the radio stuff. Say a few words about virtualization of infrastructure, something we've heard we've heard talked about today, focusing on two projects in particular that NAB has been involved in. I want to talk about a couple regulatory topics of interest on the radio side, and then I'm finally going to end up with just a few words about the broadcast positioning system, which is a technology that my TV colleagues at NAB have been working on now for the last couple years, and maybe you've heard of it. So when you think of the digital transition, you might be thinking about, you know, how you used to have that huge Hulken heavy big television, and now we have these lovely flat panel displays. And we have, you know, equally grand displays now in automobiles for radio. And displays are a part of it, but, you know, I think an even bigger part of it is on the content side. And to illustrate that, I grabbed an old TV guide, and, you know, this was it. This is what people's choices were. And it, by contrast, I have a ATSC 3.0 TV at home, and I pulled up the guide on the TV, which you can do, of course, and look at what I see. This is just for two stations. If you look closely, you'll notice that half of these, you know, there's multicast channels for each of these channel 9 and channel 11. So, you know, the amount of content that's available because of the digital transition is truly amazing. Just some brief milestones, and my understanding is that these slides are going to be shared with you all later. So if I go through a little faster than you can read them, it's because I know you have those later. And I have the, you know, someone looked up death by PowerPoint in the dictionary, and my picture was next to it. So I'll try to get through all these. The key highlights here, though, of course, and when we talk about the digital TV transition, is it was a mandatory transition, right? All TV broadcasters had to switch. There was a converter box program. You know, it was really a nicely done, I think, digital transition and quite successful. Of course, nothing's ever easy, though, right? Because right in the middle of all this whole digital transition thing for TV, we got the incentive auction, and we compressed the TV band, and it, you know, it just made things very complicated. And it's really this last item here, 2021, that's when LPTV and TV translators finally had to turn off their analog signals. So this was, you know, it wasn't that long ago. This has been a worldwide phenomenon. This is a map I found online showing the digital television transition status. You know, and there's hardly green is not planned or in early stages, and there are very few countries on this map which are colored in green. So similarly for radio, timeline's a little different. It lagged behind the digital TV transition. It was 2002 when the FCC authorized digital radio, which is 22 years ago. There was some interesting work done. NPR was involved in the push to support multicasting on digital radio with their Tomorrow Radio project. And one thing that NAB has been heavily involved in is all digital AM. We did a test program on all digital AM, and in 2020, the FCC authorized all digital AM on a voluntary basis for U.S. broadcasters. Not too many are doing it, but they're allowed to. Unlike FM, there is no all digital service authorized yet for FM, and honestly, nobody seems to be interested in that right now so much. So here's just a little chart showing a comparison. The major differences in these transitions I've highlighted here on top. Voluntary, which is what the digital radio transition has been, versus mandatory. And proprietary system, the HD radio system, is a proprietary technology versus a standard that was developed by a collaboration of a number of companies and you know, we resulted in the ATSC standard. And you can see by the figures on this chart that, you know, digital TV is definitely here. Digital radio is not here nearly as much. And the factor that's not reflected in this table, of course, is that of those 20% of stations which are broadcasting a digital signal cover most of the major markets. So it's a little misleading. You know, most places where you go, you can find HD radio. So what happened? What was the impact? Again, I think that the consumer choice, the amount of programming available over broadcast, was the most meaningful and important part of the digital transition. Multicasting, right? It's something we have in both radio and TV. The improvements in the picture and the sound quality. There was a little bit of an adjustment to be made, though, right? For TV people in particular, TV viewers who may have been used to seeing a snowy image on a distant station now either get the station or they don't, because that's how digital works. Not so much with HD radio, because the HD radio system blends to analog, and that was one of the attractive features of HD radio for broadcasters, was that you didn't disenfranchise listeners that only had analog radios, and you had this graceful degradation. One thing that people thought at the beginning of the transition, I think, was that maybe we'd have some renaissance in data casting, because now we have all this amazing new capability with both television and radio. I haven't seen it. I don't know if anybody in the audience here has examples of really successful data casting applications for digital TV or digital radio, but they seem to pale in comparison to, for example, the revenue that broadcasters obtain by broadcasting, you know, television and radio signals. Now, there's another transition actually underway for digital TV right now, right, to the ATSC 3 next-gen system. I'm not going to talk so much about that today, but it's interesting to be following that, because unlike the first digital TV transition, the transition to ATSC 3 is a voluntary transition. There's no converter boxes, no government mandate at this point. So it's moving more slowly, I think, than we can expect it to move more slowly than the first transition did. This is an interesting test that's being done to demonstrate how you can use ATSC 3.0 signals in what's basically a network, kind of like cellular telephones, where receivers can drive from one reception area to the next and continue to receive a signal, an internet-like, you know, signal. So that's one of the ideas that's being pursued for data casting using ATSC 3. For radio, there are digital services that support traffic information for radios. In fact, I have a Hyundai car with a hybrid radio, and one of the buttons on the soft button screen is HD radio data, which is interesting, and you don't see very much. In fact, I haven't pushed it in a long time, but it is a capability that I think is underutilized. There are some advanced modes that have been developed for HD radio, which provide significantly greater throughput. And perhaps one of these modes will take root and help launch some sort of data service over radio. It remains to be seen. The one mode that I have here highlighted, MP1XOV, that's a particularly attractive mode because it's backwards compatible, so the original HD radio signal is still receivable, but it adds what's called an overlay to increase the amount of throughput. And I'm going to try and show you how that overlay works. The existing signal, each carrier it's a QPSK signal, so at any given time, you know, one symbol out of four is being transmitted, and that's what this scatter diagram represents. Each of these spots represents the four symbols that can be transmitted, and only one's transmitted at a time, of course, but if you have an oscilloscope or a monitor that can remember, this is the kind of diagram that you see. It shows you over time, you know, all four of these symbols are being transmitted. Now, what an overlay does is, instead of only transmitting one symbol in each quadrant, you transmit four. So now you have another QPSK signal in each of these quadrants of the the base signal. And what happens is, for example, you know, and at any given time, only one of these signals will be received. But you can, let's say it's this one here where I've got my cursor, then for the base layer, it's that symbol in the upper right, and then in the overlay layer, it's, you know, it's this one out of the four. So it's a little hard to figure out, perhaps, but it's less robust, too, because a very important feature of these scatter diagrams is how close the received symbol is to the decision threshold. That's represented by these axes here. So in the case of just QPSK, you can see there's a lot of distance between the symbol and the decision threshold. So it's probably very robust, and even as you add noise, you're still going to reliably receive that signal. But when you go to the overlay mode now, if this is the symbol that's been received, it's much closer to the decision threshold, so it's going to be a less robust signal. As you add noise, you're going to lose the ability to detect that symbol quicker with the overlay mode. So, but this is just an example of the technology development that's still going on, and I think still holds some promise for some data casting services. This is just a spectral diagram of the MP1XOV mode. And it looks very similar to other FM HD radio diagrams, where you have the analog signal in the center and you have an upper and lower digital sideband. So that's my brief review of the transition from analog to digital. I'm going to talk about a second transition here for a moment, which is the internet delivery of video and audio. And quite frankly, I mean, when we were developing HD radio back in the early 2000s, this was never contemplated. This has kind of come, you know, this has all happened since we launched our digital radio service. And, you know, with the availability of ubiquitous internet, you know, mobile internet, you can support these radio-like services now using streaming. And in TV, of course, you have your smart TVs. That's where we consume streaming television, and we've seen the advent of these FAST channels, the free ad-supported streaming television channels. And in fact, broadcasters are now actually in competition with the set manufacturers, right? Because Samsung TV Plus, you know, if you buy your new Samsung TV, it has a couple hundred channels on it that are being provided by Samsung, and presumably Samsung is the one selling ads that support this service. With radio, for streaming, we have hybrid radio. That's when a radio receiver can receive both over the air and internet delivered signals. And this allows broadcasters to augment their over the air signal with internet content, but it also makes it possible for an internet radio provider like TuneIn, for example, to bring a service to the car, and that's, of course, in direct competition with the radio service. And podcasting. Podcasting is a big deal, I think, and I'm going to be mentioning more about podcasting as I go along. Here's a recent survey result from Edison that shows how impactful streaming and podcasts have been in radio listenership. And if you do the math, you know, this from 2014 to 2024, streaming and podcasts went from 13 to 30%, and that's actually, more than the drop here, but that's pretty significant. And similarly now for television. Of course, if we'd drawn this graph 5 or 6 years ago, cable would have had the lion's share of this graph. Over-the-air broadcast has actually benefited from the advent of streaming, because now, and I don't have any numbers on that, but more consumers receive TV over the air now than they did before, and it's a lot by a lot more. It's like doubled, I think, almost. Here's just again some breaking news about podcasting, and I thought this was an interesting statistic because podcasting, in my mind, is a lot like. The Netflixes and the HBO is in the TV world where you have nonlinear content that, you know, at your fingertips. And the equivalent for radio, I think, is really podcasting seems to be driving that. And it's going to continue to become an important factor. So similarly, this digital transition number two also resulted in more consumer choice, right? It also resulted in improved picture and sound quality because now we're regularly watching 4K television. And it brings, you know, the benefits that you have with a two-way connection, interactivity. Like my cool AI radio demo, right? I was able to interact with that streaming radio service. And the analytics, which is the listener behavior, which is, you know, measured. It's measured, it's actual measurement of behavior, and it's not just a census. It's not just like Arbitron having people filling out a diary and then extrapolating that to a larger audience. So how are broadcasters taking advantage of this streaming revolution? ATSC3 is a system that was designed to take full advantage of the streaming capabilities of smart televisions. And I have an example here from our local NBC station in Washington, D.C. When I tune into that station, I see this bug pop up, and it'll go away in a second. That says this is a, you know, that we have an app. We've downloaded an app, and if you press that right button, you're going to get a menu. And the picture you see in the back, by the way, is that's just what's being broadcast. And this menu comes up on the next-gen television, and it allows you to do things like restart the program. I haven't tried that yet, but that's a pretty nice feature. See, powered with next-gen TV. But if you see all these little boxes here, this is video content that you can stream on demand on this television, and you're doing it from within the broadcaster's channel interface. And that's kind of the main thing is the broadcaster, you still have this viewer. They haven't gone away to Netflix or HBO or, you know, some fast channel. They're tuned into your channel, and now they're looking at your streaming content, you know, through your app on the next-gen television. So streaming for radio is more problematic. We all know about the performance royalty issues. Broadcasters pay a lot more to stream music than they do to send it over the air. And that has kind of put a damper on radio station adoption of streaming, I think. Although, you know, every radio broadcaster streams, but I think the fact that the listenership isn't, you know, doesn't begin to approach what they have over the air means that they can afford to do that. But the nonlinear content aspect of hybrid radio is the aspect that's most intriguing to me, because I'm eager to see a hybrid radio take advantage of a broadcaster's nonlinear content the way that next-gen TV app does, where you're tuned into a radio station and you get a list of podcasts that radio station makes available, for example. So, and that's not something we've seen yet, and I think that's something that we need to advocate for. One thing that the hybrid radios do support, if the broadcaster is willing, is so-called station following or service following, which is a receiver tuning to switching from the over-the-air signal to a streaming version of the signal for some reason, because you've gone too far away. You're out of the coverage area of the station is the typical example. And at least this is a slide I grabbed from DTS AutoStage, and the way their system works is it will switch to the stream, but then if you come back into the coverage area, it switches back to the over-the-air signal. And that's important because of what I was saying a minute ago about the streaming royalties. Again, though, here's just another slide to talk about how radio has embraced podcasting, and this content is there. And what radio broadcasters really need is a good way for listeners to be able to access it, you know, when they're listening to their favorite station. So there's my transition presentation. What I'd like to do now is just talk a little bit about what's going on in digital and hybrid radio. It's a challenging transition for radio, and I mentioned what I think the two main reasons are. It's voluntary, and it's the proprietary system aspect, which the impact of that is, I think, it tends to stifle innovation. If you look at open systems, you see lots of people developing lots of different things. And with a proprietary system, you really are relying on the system developer. And they've done a lot of good things, to be sure. But it's different, I think, than if it had been a truly open system. One kind of nagging point for me is General Motors has, by and large, taken HD radio out of their vehicles. And they're the largest car maker in the U.S., so that's challenging. And I think that it's all because they want listeners to use services that GM is going to provide them and make money on. So that's my theory. Here's a graph showing the blue lines here in each year. This is 2018, 2021, 2024. You can see that the adoption of HD radio by stations is really not changing very much. And it's still only about, just looking at FM, because most of the HD radio is on FM, it's still only about 20% of all FM stations. Now, this is kind of cool, and NAB was involved in this. Google has an operating system for cars called Android Automotive, not to be confused with Android Auto, which is the projection technology that you can use with your phone. And long story short, Google now has good support for HD radio. And this was not always the case, but NAB and an international group of broadcasters reached out to Google, developed some software, and Google embraced it, and now it's part of their system. And in fact, I mean, these are all the car makers who are planning to use Android Automotive. So this is a very important development. And in fact, I just saw this the other day, that Ford is coming out with a car next year which uses Android Automotive as its operating system. And Ford is a pretty big implementer of HD radio, so I'm hoping that this Android Automotive-based vehicle will have HD radio and we'll be able to go take a look at that and see how well they've done. This is something I talk about a lot. I've talked about this here for the last couple of years, is how good the big receiver displays have gotten. And this is our kind of our tagline is, you know, radio needs to look as good as it sounds. And here's a couple of, you know, these displays, this is what they've referred to in the industry as a pillar-to-pillar display, because it covers the entire, you know, from one side pillar of the vehicle to the other. And this is a prototype, but this is a production Lincoln. And you can buy these today. And it's got that pillar-to-pillar display. So, you know, this is just a trend that seems to be accelerating. Here's another trend, broadcasters earning revenue with metadata. Here's an image and some information about the advertiser here on the screen. This is something that you can do with HD radio. And this is also something that an analog station could support using hybrid radio. So there's more options available now for broadcasters to be using metadata for revenue generation. Station lists have become very important. And station lists are great. Let me just show you a couple here. This is a station list from a 2024 Toyota. And the arrows that I've placed here are highlighting the fact that those are multicast channels. And they, in these station lists, these multicast channels have really been promoted to looking just like the main channel. And this is the reason broadcasters should be thinking, you know, who haven't adopted HD radio yet should be thinking about it, because it's an opportunity for them to expand their reach in their market and have new stations on the air. This is an example of a now playing screen in a Mercedes, but in the back you can see that array of station logos. So again, this is what consumers are going to see. That's kind of a station list all by itself. These were taken in my Hyundai. And again, look at the AM station list. That's the one on the bottom. That's just fabulous. All that metadata, that would be impossible with HD radio. You wouldn't get a station list that looks like that. But again, if you look up on the FM one, you can see how the multicast channels are now just another channel. And I think that's a very positive development. Last but not least, here's a GM vehicle. No HD radio, no hybrid radio, and their station list is really poor. And it uses the PS field from RDS to populate this station list. And if broadcaster is scrolling PS, it just grabs some random 8-character string, and it puts it in this station list, and it keeps it there. So, that's definitely, you can see General Motors is definitely not bullish on radio. Analytics is a big deal from hybrid radio, and the DTS AutoStage system, if you onboard with them, which is free, and what that really means is it gives them a direct link for you to provide them with your metadata. You get free access to analytics for your station. And this one here, this is the heat map, which is showing where the listeners are concentrated. I'm just going to ask the crowd here, have any of you gotten maps like this for your stations? Anybody? There's one. Okay, everybody who... you can have access to this kind of information. These are the other things they'll have. Day part activity. There will be a graph showing you how many listeners you have in vehicles with these hybrid radios. So this is really, I would think, valuable and insightful information that everybody would want. So something to think about is hooking up with DTS AutoStage to get analytics for your station. On the horizon, gaming and video in the vehicle. Xperia had gaming last year's NAB show, I believe, and it's going to be there and even bigger, I think, and better this year. This is something I saw in an ad for VW. The vehicle is, I'm hoping it's parked. They're not driving down the road playing their video games. But this is coming to cars for sure, and DTS has this diagram which shows how they imagine gaming as a backseat activity, along with video, because DTS AutoStage also has a video service. So there I have some of the trends. I'll pick up my pace a little bit here, because I'm standing between you all and the bar. So virtualization of radio's infrastructure is something that we've heard a lot about. I expect you all working broadcasters and broadcast engineers know more about this than I do, but IP audio, of course, is really prevalent now. We just heard a talk about automation systems. One thing that we're following is this virtualized environment development. And one example is the Nielsen portable people meter encoder can now be built into your audio processor. So you don't need that hardware box. And I've been to stations where they have a rack that just has banks of PPM encoders, because there's one for the main, there's one for the multicast, there's one for the streaming. And then they have 5 stations in this one area. So you'll have, 15 or more of these boxes. This can help solve that problem. This is something that NAB actually spearheaded with Nielsen a couple years ago, and it's been a really successful project. Another example is EAS. There's still a requirement that broadcasters have a hardware EAS box in their facility. And we're trying to get the rules changed so that you can go from this. This is my understanding is this is how most broadcasters do this to that. Simplify it. Everything else has been virtualized, and the EAS box stands out. So this is something that we're talking to the FCC about. We've had many discussions about this with Manny from FEMA, and they're very supportive. They understand the benefits that can accrue from this type of a topology. This last example I have is so-called next-gen transport, and this is something that we heard Keir talking about earlier today with the Gates Air IP Connect, I believe is what it was called, where they combine the MPX and the E2X into a single stream. And we're working on that within NAB and supporting the work of IEEE and NRSC to try and develop a standard that would be interoperable, that you know, you could use across manufacturers. Okay, I'm getting near the end here, which is good because I'm running out of time. Two topics of regulatory interest I wanted to touch upon today. The first is this FM digital power increase proceeding, which NAB initiated along with Xperi and NPR. There were actually two parts to it. One was to kind of relax the requirements for stations who want to increase their digital power to minus 10 dBc, which is the maximum a FM HD radio station can transmit. And then also, we wanted to broadcasters be able to do asymmetric sideband transmissions without filing an experimental application, which is a real pain in the butt. And I was just talking to Sam Wallington from EMF, and he explained to me that they're coming up on their five-year expiration date for that, where they're going to have to refile. It's just a lot of paperwork for broadcasters and FCC. And we got some good news last week. The FCC is going to vote on a order to adopt asymmetric sideband operation without experimental authority. So we're excited about that. The digital power increase has become difficult primarily because aviation equipment manufacturers woke up and realized that, here's a diagram, this is at the high end of the FM band. The next band up is this aeronautical radio navigation service band. And if you have a HD radio station on 107.9, then its upper sideband is actually going to cross over into that aeronautical radio navigation service band. And it took the aviation community 22 years to realize this. Because this was true back in 2002 when the service was authorized, not a peep from anybody. When we filed this digital power increase petition, somebody read it and figured this out. And they've raised this as an issue now. So we're working with the aviation folks to develop tests and criteria for, you know, how to handle this problem, because it's an encroachment on their band. And even though they don't even use that channel, that's a channel that's not used, but it's still, it could be. Someday it might be used. So this is going to delay that digital power increase proceeding by a year more, I think, while we work this out. So that's the first one, and we're working on this. This second one is the FM booster content origination. And now I think maybe some of you noticed, but I guess it was just a few months ago, the FCC adopted new rules which allow FM boosters to originate programming 3 minutes every hour. And this was prompted, of course, by Geo Broadcast Solutions, who have developed Max Casting, which is a really fabulous, is my understanding, SFN technology for broadcasters that are simulcast, you know, the same content. Now they want to take their boosters and originate content on them. And it turns out that 11 stations have expressed an interest and are working towards deploying a zone casting type of technology. So this is something, NAB has been opposed to this for a variety of reasons. And final rules haven't been developed yet. So any of these broadcasters who put zone casting up on the air will have to get an experimental authorization to do it. And we're going to go check them out once they put them on the air. And I'll show you why. And this is a map of a zone cast network that was tested. And the areas in red you see here, those are areas where the booster and main channel, the main signal, are equal power. So it's not clear what will happen in those areas. The receiver could pick up one or the other. But we don't know because it hasn't been tested. The only testing that was done by GeoBroadcast was here, these two little areas that I've highlighted with the red circles. That is it. That is the only test data that was collected. And we have no idea about what else is going to happen. So we're going to be watching that very closely. Okay, I've got three minutes, according to the clock here. I'm going to just whip through my BPS presentation, recognizing my colleague here, Tariq Mondal, who's really the inventor, I guess, him and a couple of my other colleagues. And the short version is that, you know, GPS is relied upon not just for positioning information, but also for timing information. We know that. We were hearing about GPS-locked equipment earlier today. Well, the government in 2020 has directed, you know, I don't know, whoever does this sort of thing, Department of Transportation is involved, I know, to develop an alternate PNT, Precision Navigation and Timing Service. Because if GPS gets taken out, you know, we're in big trouble. And it turns out you can use the ATSC 3.0 signal to deliver an alternate timing reference to GPS. And we call this the broadcast positioning system. And for those of you familiar with the structure of the ATSC 3 signal, it turns out that all you have to add to the signal to do a BPS type of system is the location of your tower. And if you have that, it's already got timing information that makes it possible to develop a very precise substitute, if you will, for a GPS signal. And this is something that we're talking to the government about. We're trying to get some funding to develop some prototypes. We're actually developing a prototype, and we need the government funding, though, to really accelerate that. This is the current ATSC 3 market coverage. This may be a little out of date, too. I'm not exactly sure. But this wouldn't be enough, but we have studied that if ATSC 3 is deployed across the country, what you have is pretty much everywhere you would be able to receive a lot of signals that would allow you to develop this timing substitute for GPS. So this is something we've been working on for a while. We've got it up and running on a station in DC. We're deploying it in Baltimore and Denver. So we're really going full steam ahead on this, and I expect you'll be seeing more about it in the future. So real quick here, we have an NAB show coming up next, you know, a couple weeks in New York. We have NRSC meetings there. We're going to have our NAB Radio Technology Committee and TV Technology Committee are meeting if you're NAB members. And those committees sound interesting to you, you should reach out to me. And I know there's a couple people in the room here who are members. This is co-located with an AES convention. There's not a lot of technical content, but there is a radio and podcast forum, and there's going to be a bunch of free sessions on the floor, which I couldn't compile a list of in time for this meeting. But if you go on the NAB Show New York website, I'm sure you can learn more about that. Wow, I think I'm going to make it, just barely. I appreciate your attention. I've wanted to talk about digital transitions for a while, and this was a great opportunity for me to pull this together. And just speaking to the radio broadcasters, I do think that, you know, it's important. Make your station look as good as it sounds. We should all be thinking about how we're going to get podcasting, you know, into the mainstream, like TV broadcasters are doing with their next-gen TV apps. And these analytics, I hope I come back next year and ask that question and all the radio broadcasters raise their hands, because those analytics are there for you for the taking. It just seems crazy not to want to have access to those. And then the virtualizing operations thing, that's something that's happening pretty much without our serious involvement. And that seems like a great way to be going. It's saving broadcasters money and it's improving services. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. If you guys want to stay for a minute and let me answer questions, I'm happy to do that. So I'll leave that up to you guys to decide. Because I actually went over here a couple minutes, and I know the bartender looks kind of lonely over there. Anybody have a question? Raise your hand. Microphone up front, please. There you go.
Within the last very few months, one of the FCC commissioners made a comment about possibly another spectrum auction. Have you had any reaction, possibility,
hunches? I can't speak. Was that for which spectrum was that going to be? More TV spectrum? I don't know.
Well, the implication was they were talking TV spectrum.
I know that the FCC has lost its authority to hold auctions because some law expired, and I don't know if they have the authority to conduct auctions again yet or not. So that's a factor. I haven't heard about that, but that's what I do know is that they have to get that fixed before they can do another auction.
One other follow-up, if I could. You showed that car with the dashboard, electronic dashboard, about 4 feet wide. Has anybody ever raised that as a safety issue?
People talk about that, and the car makers are as tuned into being safe as anybody, and I can only presume that they have designed these with safety, you know, foremost in mind. And I haven't read about any lawsuits or, you know, major controversy yet about that, but honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question, though. Anything else? Great. Hey, well, thanks again, everybody, and thanks for having me here.